Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Warnocks are whinging, more Royals revelations at the Mad Stad, Jimmy's special brewers leave Posh reaching for the resolve, and Oldham are looking for yet another new manager, not Kewell. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Hey gang, hope you're well. Matt Davis Adams here for our weekly catch-up on all slash some things related to the English Football League. I'm joined by a man just itching to throw some Forest-related shade my way, having been part of the congregation at the Vicarage on Saturday. Sam Parkin.
Morning, Andre Salenzi. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Really, yeah. I mean, he'd get a game at the moment. Also with us, Adrian Clarke. He's jumped off the Stevenage hype train to join us for a bit. Choo-choo, Clarkey.
I have, yeah. Good to be back.
And completing our lineup this week is a big welcome back to the polyglot of podcasting from BBC London and more. It's Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
Hello. And as it's International Women's Day, I think, you know, we need some kind of anthem, some kind of round of applause sound effects. Producer Abby, or maybe just guarantee my win for performance of the week. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I think you've got a chance with performance of the week as well. We'll get to that shortly. But this weekend marked a year since we last saw full stadiums at EFL grounds. Anybody remember the last game they were at before all this started?
Well, having just discussed it off air with you, Matt, I'm going to change my mind. It was the Liverpool-Chelsea FA Cup game at Stamford Bridge. Remembered for Billy Gilmore, I think, playing particularly well. And then I was actually down to do, I think, Brentford-Fulham. And that was the Friday when the news came out about Mikel Arteta. And then it all got ended on that day, which was a shame.
Flo, how about you?
My last one was AFC Wimbledon-Bolton on the 7th of March and went out with a bang, 0-0 draw, really bad game. But it was interesting because when I got to the ground, overheard loads of people talking about nervousness about whether to go or not, or, you know, their other halves didn't want to turn up, or lots of this sort of chatter. And some people also saying, you know, oh yeah, nothing worries me, it's going to be fine. And I think I had some of that naivety as well. And then here we are. A year later, crazy times.
Clark, is there anything you're going to miss about pandemic football? I mean, the answer is no, really.
Do you not want to know which game was my last one? It was Arsenal.
I mean, I feel like we've kind of exhausted that, and it's not produced much of note. So, I mean, if you can improve on what we've had, then go for it.
Not really. Although, what I will say is my last EFL game with a crowd was Coventry Sunderland, and it felt like there was no crowd because I was in a stand. It was absolutely empty. So slightly irrelevant content maybe, but in terms of missing stuff, absolutely nothing about the in-game experience. But I will miss, and obviously I've not been to many games lockdown, but when I went to Norwich the other day, it was lovely to just get in my car and just go without having to queue for about 45 minutes to get out of the car park. So I won't miss that.
Yeah, that's fair. Parking was the big thing that we all came up with, I think. And that tells you all you need to know about how rubbish pandemic football is, if the parking is the best thing. Anyway, time for this.
Performance of the weekend.
Yes, it's our performance of the week. Everybody gets 15 seconds to tell us why the team they picked did the best performance in the EFL this past weekend. Flo, you can go first. You've picked Blackburn Rovers. Your 15 seconds start now.
1 point in seven games meant six changes from Mowbray. He was feeling the heat and Millwall was just the sort of side that could have extended that run to eight. Dak Attack was back in the side and provided the goods. Yes, it was a bit jammy and yeah, it was pretty ugly on a bad pitch, but it stopped the rot.
Nice. I like the way you slowed down there just to make sure that you were as close to
the buzzer. I know, I was still not about bang on and I've rehearsed that as well.
Clarky, you've gone for Yamo's Mob, Crawley Town. Your 15 seconds begin now.
Yeah, you've got to play very well to beat Tranmere at the moment. And that's what Crawley did by raising their game at Prenton Park. The winning goal was a slick Premier League class move, ending with a cheeky Nichols back flick. And it was the least they deserve. You know, Yemo's men are back in business.
Again, a little short. Is that going to continue as Sam Parkin discusses Wigan Athletic? 15 seconds start now.
Yeah, much needed win for the Latics, recording their first home victory since December the 12th. It was a first clean sheet in seven as well. An unlikely hero getting the opener, defender George Johnson with his maiden senior goal. But again, Callum Lang was the top man, 5-7 for him now. Lang on fire, not great.
Too long with Lang.
It's not about the time, is it? It's about the content. What's wrong with you?
Both of it, Whiffy. I've gone for Northampton Town. My 15-second start now. Many would say I've made a career out of talking cobblers, so this will be a breeze. Back-to-back wins for Town for the first time this season as they pulled apart Pompey, a first four-goal haul of the campaign to 14 shots on goal with just 30% possession. No wonder John Brady's staying for the season. Yeah, that was it, wasn't it? Perfection. Head to At The Totally Show to cast your vote. Next, we Championship.
Pep, what do you think of the risks of players taking part in fantasy football?
I think that fantasy football? What is this fantasy football?
And Man City win the treble again with an incredible goal for Erling Haaland, who's just signed a 10-year contract with Man City. He said what sealed it was the long flowing locks of manager Pep Guardiola. Look at him there on the sidelines, his hair cascading down over his shoulders.
Next question.
That's one sort of fantasy football, Pep. Paddy Power.
18+ BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. The Canaries of Norwich continue to soar with Pukki up to 20 goals, whilst Watford are up to second after their win against Shropshire Forest. This will shock you. Neil Warnock felt the referee officiating a game his team lost could have done better.
He's in a bad position. He's guessing like he did guess for the penalty or somebody else told him. I think the fourth official gave it. Something like that. Because he's the nearest man to the penalty in the 90 whatever it is minute. And if you're not sure, you don't give it.
Rotherham's games against Brentford and Luton are postponed after the Millers recorded their second COVID outbreak of the season. Coventry are close to finalising a return to the Rico for next season. And Derby have stopped taking the knee before games. They say the message has become diluted. Let's start with a game that left Neil Warnock fuming. Controversy all over the gaff as Swansea snatched their second late penalty winner in as many games to best Borough. Firstly, Adrian, did Swansea deserve the W here?
Well, they were lucky. I think that match is clear to see. I felt it was a pretty even game. Middlesbrough definitely matched them for long periods. They created some decent chances. But yeah, I completely agreed with Neil Warnock's assessment afterwards, even though his rant was a little bit rambly and quite naughty at times. He definitely had a point. I mean, clearly the Boller goal should have stood. It was, not a foul in the build-up, and the winning penalty. I mean, this is what really frustrates me about referees now. I mean, you've got to understand the game. Bidwell has knocked the ball out for a goal kick. There's no way he's getting anywhere near having a shot. He has lost control of the ball. He's basically knocked it out. And for that reason, it's not a penalty. Joke.
I completely agree with everything Adrian said, but I'm giving Gavin Ward one benefit of the doubt on the second decision, so the penalty one, because I do think that George Saville is very risky diving in that late in the game with his back to the referee, like lunging in that moment, which he timed perfectly. That's great defending in terms of the context, but at the same time, it's a risky move to make so late on. And I'm not saying he shouldn't try, but I just do think to dive in with your back to the referee, so he's not got the best view of that. I don't think it was a penalty, but that's the only sort of benefit of the doubt that I could give Gavin Wolf is a lunge that late on.
Abby's pointing out that Swansea went 25 games without a pen, and now they've had three in a row. Sam, I enjoyed the little dig back from Steve Cooper post-match. He's talking about not wanting his players to make tackles like that in the first place. Nice to see some shade thrown Collins' way.
To be honest, that really annoyed me. Just why can't managers just say, we got a little bit lucky today? What are the supporters going to think? Oh, he's not a good manager, or, you know, going to go down in their estimation. Just let's be honest. They got fortunate, didn't they? A couple of decisions that guys have just spoken about. The first one's a joke, absolute joke. And I kind of agree with Flo on the second one, that it's one of those decisions we could be watching replays till next week and it's probably not that conclusive. Was there a touch on the ball? Is there a little kick on the shin? Who gets the ball? Who knows? But quite frankly, just be honest and say today a point was probably the best we deserved out of that game when we've got a bit lucky. And it does even itself out and what have you. And Neil Warnock obviously has had decisions go his way. And the way that him and his coaching staff are in the technical area, like, I think sometimes you've got to be a bit more balanced when decisions go against you, because, you know, loads of things have gone for Neil Warnock, I'm sure, throughout his career.
What I will say is that Cooper, I think, got it right a little bit with his team selection. We spoke, I think it was on last week's show, saying he needed to maybe give one or two players a breather just to shake up the formula. And obviously he left Jamal Lowe on the bench, Bidwell as well. And yeah, just doing something like that, just taking out two regulars, I think might have been helpful. It didn't really work with Smith and Hourihane in behind IU, but yeah, they got the result in the end. And what a week for Swansea to pick up 6 points when, you know, they could easily have had two or less.
After having a go at Neil, I'll tell you what, next season, Middlesbrough, great shout, I reckon. I like the look of the squad already that he's putting together. I think there'll be a force next year now that he's staying.
Yes, he is staying, isn't he? Steve Gibson has convinced him to do so. Let's move on to Bristol City 0, Queen's Park Rangers 2. Nigel Pearson had a lovely old start to life as Brizzle boss, but there were no home comforts for the man who feels the need to sign off tweets with an abbreviated version of his name on Saturday, as Nigel and the gang went down 2-0 to QPR at Ashton Gate, a record fifth straight home defeat for Brizzle. Flo, you were on this for BBC London, but in this new pandemic-related BBC way of covering away games, tell us about it, how it works, what it was like.
Yeah, at the moment there's a, I guess you could call it a ban, but that makes it sound, you know, a bit, I don't know, over the top. But yeah, local radio aren't allowed to travel to cover away games. So it's frustrating, obviously, for a lot of the teams that's their main source of coverage, because they're not going to get a lot of love on Five Live or Final Score or Soccer Saturday, whatever it may be. But yeah, unfortunately, that's the case because of the pandemic, should be ending quite soon. And, you know, to be honest, all the local radio stations have got on with it and found a way around it. So for BBC London, we're tuning into iFollow or whatever the stream might be and doing updates that way. So I've done that for a couple of games now for the London teams, and I was doing that for QPR Bristol on Saturday.
And on the pitch, it went pretty well for yours and Sam's boys.
Yeah, it was really good, to be honest. I think, obviously, QPR were lucky and probably flattered a little bit by how poor Bristol City were. I think it was one of QPR's best performances of the season, but I don't know how much you can look at that just being them and the lack of what Bristol City brought to the table that day. But at the same time, really confident, never looked troubled, very classy performance. And the most important thing was that they took their chances. The reason Swansea lost to Bristol City is because they missed so many good chances. So the key for QPR on the weekend was, as soon as you get something, you've got to score it. And they did that. I mean, Ilias Chair, 5'2", he's shorter than me, with a header. Really good ball in from Todd Kane, who's had a tough season, hasn't had a lot of love. That's his third assist as well. He's got much better as the season's gone on. And Rob Dickey, who's proving himself to be one of the best defenders in the EFL and probably will be playing in the Premier League very soon. It's just a very good performance. I would have liked to see them score a couple more goals. They haven't scored more than three this season, and that was the kind of game where they could have pushed on and scored four, and it would have been such a big boost. But having not beaten Bristol City at Ashton Gate since 2002, that is a good one to kind of break a bit of a bad history record.
Sam, you'd say they're safe now, I guess. 43 points from 33 games. Mark Warburton looking toward next season in the same way as Neil Warnock at this point?
Yeah, quite possibly. On Saturday, with the squad he's got, I really like the look of that team. Obviously, he needs some new blood in the summer in a lot of areas. But I think with what he's got at the moment, having De Vrij in there for his debut in place of Cameron, Field in for Ball, and Willock in for one of the misfiring frontmen, Dykes or Macaulay Bonn, I think it made complete sense. And I think it got a really good performance. I think that front area is the area where it's a bit problematic. And like Swansea, he played two number 10s in Willock and Elias Chair, which I thought was a really interesting way to go about things. And obviously, especially in that first half, they were scintillating. Bristol City just couldn't live with them. So food for thought for Mark Warburton moving forward. And I would suggest that front area is somewhere he needs to improve. Definitely needs more pace in the side. It's alarming when I see QPR. There is no one that can really run in that team. So the wing backs, if that's a way he's going to go, probably need strengthened. And with Dickey and now potentially a De Vrij coming in, maybe one more centre-half, and we could be talking about QPR having a playoff challenge.
As for Bristol City, Clarke, new manager bounce never lasts forever. It hasn't lasted that long in this case, and maybe a good opportunity for Nigel Pearson to learn a bit more about where his squad are actually at and what he needs to do in terms of recruitment in the summer.
Yeah, he described Bristol City as being too passive, the players that he's got. And it's definitely something we've talked about throughout the season, a lack of aggression, a lack of real strength without the ball. And yeah, they're just not hard enough to play against or to score against. You've got to look at, I always think set piece goals conceded is a good gauge of how sort of resilient a team is, because you're all in the right positions. It's like, do I want to defend? You know, how much do I want to get my head on this ball and be strong? And they rank bottom in terms of set piece goals conceded. They're just a little bit flimsy and maybe too nice. So Nigel Pearson, if he sticks around, will definitely be looking to bring in some tougher players, some more resilient defenders, I think, moving forward. Oh, it was bad luck in this game as well. They lost, obviously, Nash and Viner, two of his three midfielders, to head injuries. So that's never going to be helpful. But yeah, in general, they just need to toughen up a bit, Bristol.
It was even more difficult as well in the second half because of the situation with the subs. They made three first half substitutes at three different points. And the five subs rule, even though you can make five subs, it can still only happen at 3 points in the game, excluding half time. So once the second half restarted, they couldn't make any more changes. And then they were kind of stuck, really. It would have to be a complete refresh with the remaining two at half time or nothing. So then it felt like, well, there was definitely no way out.
Good stuff. Anyone like to have another go at the question I asked last week about whether Darren Moore done the right thing swapping Doncaster for Sheffield Wednesday? 3-0 gubbing at Reading leaves the Owls 7 points from safety, albeit with a game in hand on Birmingham, who are just above the dotted line. We'll start with the victors, though. 3 wins on the spin for Reading. Clean sheets in all of those. Looks like that wobble is firmly behind them, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Not been as free scoring in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, I think just two in the last four, actually. So 2-1-0s preceded this. So a timely result, I think, with Cardiff and Barnsley breathing down their necks. They're obviously in amazing form. Different system, diamond midfield, McIntyre, exceptional. And obviously a front two with a lot of injuries to forward players especially. So a really good result, but you know, helped out enormously by an abject Sheffield Wednesday. You know, even down to 10, you expect them to make a better fist of it, and they've got huge problems. The one thing looking at the setup right now, just with Barry Bannon playing kind of a bit forward, further forward off a front man, it just screams to me to get Izzy Brown in that side and get Barry Bannon maybe playing a bit deeper where he can still get on the ball and dictate things. He does all his best work miles away from the goal, Barry Bannon. So maybe that's something that might happen in the next few weeks, because Izzy Brown was sensational in the number 10 position for Luton.
So Wednesday had Julian Borna rightly sent off for pulling down Pushkas. Not the only thing he pulled as he ripped apart his shirt. Abby says, have Sam or Adrian ever done that? Adrian, I'm going to go ahead and guess that no, you never ripped an opponent's shirt.
I mean, Matt, I could have done it. Who says, you know, five-a-side gets pretty hectic these days?
Sorry, I should have caveated that with in a game of professional football.
Yeah, no, I've never done that. I did. I don't know how it happened. I don't know. I was once in a nightclub where one of my friends had a shirt that was ripped in that kind of styly. I can't remember how it happened. He must have had a fight or something, but I completely forgot it. But what I haven't forgotten is the DJ on the dance floor saying, "Whoa, we've got the Incredible Hulk in the house tonight, blah, blah, blah." It just made me laugh. It stuck with him. He's always known as the Hulk now. But yeah, it was, look, I've got no sympathy with him. I think he could be in for a fine from the club there. That's an irresponsible challenge. You're never going to win the ball. You can't tackle from behind anyway now. And he's just got to stand off and do the right thing. He crippled his team there. That was very bad defending.
That answer did not go the way that I expected it to. Flo, Wednesday going down, aren't they? Six defeats on the bounce. They've got Norwich, Huddersfield and Barnsley next. Can you see any way that they can save themselves?
It's not looking good, and Darren Moore is running out of time quite quickly. I understand why he took the job, because it is a big club, but after what he was on the cards to do with Doncaster Rovers, it does seem like a bit of a mistake. And I'm worried about what is awaiting them as well once they inevitably do go down. And on the weekend, I know a lot of Wednesday fans. I live with a Wednesday fan, and the podcast, The Wednesday Week on Saturday, were just sharing YouTube videos about how to cap a chimney and how to install your toilet properly, because they said that was more entertaining than the game. So it's really not looking good. And I just think there's only room scenario, and it is them going down.
So they are looking down. Barnsley, though, looking up. All they do is win, 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 no matter what. That's DJ Khaled, apparently. Dreadful racket. We got to speak about Barnsley, though. This seven wins on the spin is incredibly impressive. Sam, you've bigged up Daryl DK before. How good is he?
He's had a brilliant start, yeah. Perfect for the way that they play. I didn't think he had this in his armoury. What a goal. Incredible. Only place it could have gone. Absolute rocket. Wasn't a very good game by all accounts. So Barnsley winning ugly should be ominous for everyone else as well. I had a little look at the statistics from this game because of Barnsley are quite direct. Obviously, they play in the final third when they win the ball back high and play some nice intricate little stuff. But the goalkeeper booms it. The centre-halves don't take any chances. Barnsley, 95 long balls in this game. Birmingham, 92. It was by far and away the most, if you combine them, in comparison to any other game in the Championship, which I thought was quite interesting and gives you some insight into how Barnsley are going about this. I think Millwall with 92 was the highest other team in the Championship. So it was a bit of a game which produced a lot of head tennis, but Barnsley with a brilliant winning moment. And again, I'm like a broken record, but the geezer just makes early substitutions. Another two at half time, all five used. And he's got a squad that are willing, all of them to a man, to give absolutely everything in the intensive way that they play.
Flo, you can make a case that Barnsley's recruitment has been better than anybody else's in the division this season. I'm talking managers and players. It's kind of gone under the radar, but there's been so many hits and hardly any misses.
Yeah, no, I would say definitely one of the best recruitments of the season. And I think where they are succeeding, where so many are failing, is they've really built an identity and a culture that everyone's bought into. There's a strategy, there's a plan, and it's quite obvious, and there's longevity to it as well. There's succession to it, and very few clubs are doing that. I think this is where QPR are kind of in limbo a little bit, is work out who you are and what you want to be and where you want to go, and then you can get the piece of the puzzle to fall into place. So many clubs in the bottom half of the table are just treading water, and then the rest of the table are trying to get to somewhere that they're probably not ready for yet, or don't even know if they really want to be financially or just in terms of ability. So I think that's why Barnsley have been patient, and over the last 4 years have been building something to get to this point, have been so smart with their recruitment on the pitch and off the pitch, that it would be great to see them go into the playoffs this season. Is it maybe a year too soon to be going up possibly maybe next season. I agree with Sam that I think they're going to be pushing for automatic promotion. So maybe it's better that they kind of wait a year and be ready to seriously go up and challenge in the Premier League.
Adrian, Birmingham, 3 wins in 18. Their next run of fixtures, Bristol City, Reading, Watford, Swansea, Brentford. Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, I'd be more worried about their form or this performance. Yeah, as Sam's rightly pointed out, it was a sort of an ugly game, and it can be like that, can't it? And I just felt that Karanka's team selection was a little bit off. I think they'd been playing for the back four. They'd had the wingers, Sanchez and Bella, in the team, Halilovic as well. And there were signs that they were doing all right. You know, they put up some better performances, even won some games. But yeah, he picked a team that had zero creativity. He picked Jukovic alongside Hogan, but no creative players at all. Just none. So basically, there were two goal threats on the pitch and no one really to supply the bullets. And it's little wonder that they had no shots on target. And they caused a threat at set plays, but that was it, really. So, yeah, Karanka not covering himself in glory at a time when Birmingham fans are sort of on his case anyway. So yeah, slight concern there. But yeah, they've got to find some form from somewhere. And maybe, as Flo was just saying there, decide on what they want to be. You know, Barnsley know who they are. Birmingham's, it seems, you know, one minute they want to recruit a manager to play football, you know, great football. The next they want a winning manager that keeps things tight. One game they pick creators, the next they pick none. It's a bit confusing, really.
Yeah, and I've had the unfortunate pleasure of watching Birmingham far too much this season, and they are truly terrible. And I don't understand why Karanka has even made it this far into the season with the fact that they're position the table hasn't really moved that much for the last sort of 3 or 4 months. They are really bad. They play very negative football, and that is Karanka's style, and I get that. But at this point, it's not going to keep you up. It's getting you into more trouble. So something's got to give. And what's worse is that things are getting even messier off the pitch with the things that have been going on the last few weeks and financial difficulty there. So it just doesn't look good to stick with him. And I'm surprised that he's made it this far after some really bad results and performances. And he kind of saved himself with a couple of wins. And now it looks like he's back onto that bad pattern again.
Yeah, you wonder if they're just thinking that they can't really afford to sack him. Sam, let's have a line on Watford Forest as you were there. Mainly talk about Watford, please.
Oh, mate. It's not good. It's not good for you. I think that's the fourth Forest game I've done, 0 points, 0 points. And the next four, I don't need to tell you this, but Reading, Norwich, Brentford, Cardiff. I think it was in the spate of reverse fixtures when I last saw them. And I think they've improved defensively. Going forward, there's just zero threat. And it's so hard to put your finger on it because you look at the calibre of the players and what they've done in the Championship. And maybe that's wrong to do that previously, but you know, Lolly miles away from where he was last season. Taylor and Glenn Murray looked like me in my final knock-ins on Saturday, to be honest. But not doing themselves any favours because there's no one near him. Absolutely no one near him. A huge gap. Krivinovic, for me, is a brilliant little technician, but he's not a number 10. So there's your problems. Watford, what they've done all season, really. Played probably in third gear, I would say, as well. Probably had another couple of gears to go into, but defend leads brilliantly. And I felt it was a day when Watford were there to be got at. You know, a midfield three made up of João Pedro, Zinka Nagel and Will Hughes, who has turned into Xavi stroke Makélélé in the last few weeks. But if ever you were going to go there and play without the handbrake, that was it. So I thought it was a missed opportunity for your boys.
A word from me on Forest, impotent. More words on the Reds on 2 stars. That's the Nottingham Forest podcast from The Athletic. It drops every Thursday. Right, it's time to build our always on the nose midweek hacker with the help of our sponsors, Paddy Power. Flo, your pick comes from the Championship.
Yeah, not surprisingly, going for QPR to beat Wickham at home. QPR did not play well in the fixture earlier this season at Adams Park, so expecting them to get the win against a Wickham side already kind of down and dead and buried. Always fight, always high spirited, but QPR have been playing a lot better the last couple of weeks, so I think they will finish the job.
Abby, what are the odds on QPR getting the win in the Gareth Ainsworth derby?
Unsurprisingly, Paddy Power also expecting QPR to win 8-13. They are. Wickham are 4-1. And I just want to peel back the curtain on something here. Matt's living in a fantasy world. He's written that Watford and Forest, the score was 1-0 to Forest. So oh, yeah. little insight into his mind there.
Oh, optimist, you know, guilty, fine.
Also note how they're not the two-time European champions when they lose. It's like Andy Murray.
No, they still are the two-time European champions. They won the European Cup twice. You need to a way to remember that, Abby. That's twice more than Arsenal have managed. Okay, we'll continue as we roll on through the leagues. Next,
Zing.
We're going to League One. Take that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One headlines. Raise a glass for Brewers' revival. Tigers top the table while Lincoln are back to winning ways. Ipswich, though, are undercooked in Kent. And keep your eyes on Sunderland. 5 points off the top, 2 games in hand. Their latest win coming against Rochdale, who now prop up the rest. We're going to start, though, with the team second in the form table, but 18th in the actual table. 2 goals in 4 minutes, securing 3 points for Burton as they saw off promotion chasing Peterborough. Sam, let's have some love for this Burton revival because it's been absolutely astonishing. We had them written off before Jimmy came in.
Yeah, it's been incredible. This is probably has to go down as the best one yet of the seven. Wins in 9 or whatever it is. I mean, just incredible defensive solidity, a threat from set pieces. Johnny Smith, I think, is the attacking player who's bringing them a constant threat as well when they go forward. And I can't remember who I nicked this off, but I thought these statistics were pretty impressive. Only the 5th time they've won 4 successive EFL games, so on the cusp of breaking a record. And Lucas Akins has played in all 16 games. Of that, which I thought was incredible. And Hasselbank's been in charge of 15 of the 16 games. So two players that have been there and done it, I suppose, in Burton's Football League journey. And I thought they did a really unbelievably good defensive job against Peterborough's wonderful free-throwing front players who had a rare off day. And it was actually up to the substitutes to pose a bit more of a threat than the usual suspects. So a brilliant result. And yeah, no danger of them getting relegated this year. He's been fantastic.
We'll get some thoughts on Peterborough from Adrian in a second. First, though, Flo, have you got a theory as to why some managers just work at some clubs? You had Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank at QPR. It didn't go great. He didn't pull up many trees at Northampton either. But him and Burton are hand in glove kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I've been thinking about this a lot since he returned to Burton and like following their games and looking at the stats and trying to really work out how he's managed to do this, because when he was at QPR, what he did do is he made the team very defensively good, which has always been a challenge to do with QPR, and he's brought some of that to Burton as well, and that's obviously helps, and his obsession with clean sheets shows that. And I think that his obsession with clean sheets has always been part of his mentality, but it's really going forward where I think his sides have always lacked. But from watching Burton's games recently, I think what they've done is worked out what they're good at and really exploited that and made the most of any set piece opportunities, crowded the box. They're a big physical side. And I think that's what you've got to do when you're fighting for relegation. I would maybe worry about him next season, about, you know, once that fight for survival and that fighting mentality evaporates a little bit, it's like, right, what are we going to do now? And you wouldn't want him to maybe ruin his legacy at all if things go sour next season, because maybe this will get his career, managerial career, back up and running and he might get another big job again. But I don't know if he's got enough beyond just making teams really hard to beat defensively.
Darren Ferguson, you probably say the same about him and Peterborough, Adrian. He's not going to be too concerned. Is he level on points with leaders Hull? And they've got two games in hand. The winning slash undefeated streak coming to an end. But sometimes you just get beaten by a team who play better on the day.
Exactly. Yeah. First, I've been talking about a lot of the sort of losing teams today and sort of picking up on what's gone wrong. But I'm not going to lay into Peterborough. I think it happens. They come up against an informed Burton team, superbly organised. You know, Carter and Boswick, brilliant at the back, Mancien in front, doing fantastically. They just negated Peterborough's strengths. And they've got a lot of flair and they rely on a bit of movement as well in those forward areas and interplay. And sometimes it just doesn't happen for you. And for Dembele, Smodix and Clark Harris, it was just an off day where the defenders got the better of them. And one stat I've sort of picked up though with Posh is slow starts. That they've been going behind too often. They've led at half time in just one of their last 12. So they keep giving themselves a mountain to climb. So that's definitely something to work on. The other thing is that they've moved away from the back three, which I thought was working really well. Gone with a back four, which pushes Thompson out to the right, which he can do, and Ward further forward. But has that imbalanced the team a bit? I don't know. You know, Posh fans will probably know that better than me, seeing them 90 minutes every week. But yeah, one or two things for them to work on, but they're fine, Peterborough, absolutely fine.
Let's go on to Hull City 2, Bristol Rovers 0 then. Gavin W giving Rovers a schooling with his brace. Very good, Abby. Go to the top of the class if you got that one straight away. Hull, top of the table. Go on then, Clarky. You can talk about the team who actually won the game this time then.
It's an embarrassment of riches, really, for Hull. I mean, they're not blowing teams away at Hull. I mean, Hull 2-0 is becoming quite a familiar scoreline. I think it's happened a lot during the current campaign. But in terms of options up front, that's what stands out for me. Crowley, Lewis Potter and Eves were all on the bench here for this one, and they had McGuinness up front, White, Honeyman and Wilkes in behind. So, I mean, that's seven players into four that they can just mess around with Man City style if they want, and it's going to be fine. So really, really in a good place, I think, Hull City. Obviously, Jacob Greaves has been a massive plus for them at the back. Only 20 years old. Of course, he was at Cheltenham last year. We were talking about him and he's doing great for them. So, yeah, I think Hull have stability. You know, they're pretty solid. And then they've got this front group of players that can interchange on a match-by-match basis, maybe depending on who they're up against in terms of the style that they want to go. So, yeah, I think Hull are in good nick to go up automatically now.
Bristol Rovers, by contrast, not going great for Joey Barton so far. His team are in the relegation zone. It's not been an ideal start.
Yeah, apologies if I said this before, but I just haven't got a clue who's making the decisions there, what they're trying to go for, because you can get a bigger contrast in the last three managers. So I don't think Joey Barton's a bad manager. I think he's done brilliantly at Fleetwood. I think he did brilliantly at Fleetwood. Definitely deserved another chance at a good club, which Bristol Rovers is. But I think there's big problems at both ends of the pitch. I think Clint Hill, I would presume, will be the man who will be tasked with taking the defenders this week, building up to two enormous home matches against Atkinson and then against AFC Wimbledon. So they need to improve in that regard. And going forward, I don't see a great deal there either. I know Hanlon had a bit of an off day at the weekend, and Iunga scored those couple of goals a few weeks ago, was bright from the bench. That's something they could look at. But one goal in the last seven away games, I think, says it all. They're not creating anything away from the Memorial. And that goal was against Accrington Stanley, who they scored against but lost 6-1 in the reverse fixture. And that's who they play tomorrow night. So massive week for them.
I feel like you've just stolen Clarkie's stats.
No, I was going to come in with exactly the same stat. It's the standout, isn't it? It's absolutely standout. No goals in six of seven away games. And then the other one, you got spanked 6-1. It's obvious that they've got to find a formula to score more goals away from home. They are sleepwalking, aren't they, a little bit into relegation. They've got to got to buck their ideas up Bristol. But yeah, I'm with Sam. Think what you like about Joey Barton as a fella, but I think he's a pretty smart coach.
And now, you might have thought that Portsmouth to get something at Northampton would be a shoo-in, but it's back-to-back wins that Northampton have cobbled together to stop the crock, I mean rot. There were loads more of these puns that Abby wrote, but I'm stepping in here and giving them the boot. Incredible result, this, 4-1. John Brady confirmed as manager till the end of the season for the Cobblers. Before this game, they'd scored 3 goals in 2021, then it was 4 in 45 minutes. They got a bit of an assist from the Portsmouth defence and goalkeeper, though, Sam.
Yeah, I think I spoke a fortnight ago about Northampton playing maybe a little bit more football. I'm not saying this was back to exactly what they were like under Keith Curl. I think they're playing with more attacking intent, more bodies going forward, but 29% of the ball and obviously 3 goals from set pieces, as you mentioned. So it was like the Northampton of the last few seasons are really difficult to beat, especially at Sixfield and especially when they start fast. Remember this being a reoccurring theme: when they put you under pressure, teams can go under. So tough to pick out individuals. I thought I'd mention Lloyd Jones, who has had a bit of a nomadic start to his career. Found himself at Swindon a few years ago, I think on loan from Liverpool. He's been at Luton. He's been outstanding defensively. And Edmondson up top, I think, a lone player who definitely wasn't pulling up trees, performed really well in this one. And they've got one of the form players in the division right now in Ryan Watson. So a job really well done in the first half. And as it inevitably happens so often, I think a little tweak at halftime just to make them more sturdy, more solid, probably more of a 4-5-1 in the second half, just to make sure that Portsmouth couldn't get more than that one goal back.
A few Pompey fans getting in touch with us on Twitter, Jackets Jacket and Andy. Andy says, stuck record time, but how much longer must Pompey fans suffer Jacket Ball? There should have been a change 18 months ago, and now the failure to do anything sees the fans turning on the ownership. Poor football and poor results. Enough is enough. We've heard this before, Adrian. He's not universally popular with the supporters.
No, he isn't. And I get it. When results are going bad, then the style of football and the performance levels are questioned. Look, Pompey had the best defensive record, didn't they, in the league up until quite recently. I think there were 6 clean sheets on the bounce. You know, they were breaking records. Me and Sam were tipping them for the title. You know, so it's been quite a dramatic fall from them because it was looking good. It was looking really good. But 11 points from a possible 30 means that, yeah, the title's out of the question. They're now sort of scrambling for playoffs. It's just, is now the right time to make a change? I don't think so. I think just, you know, see where they go. Kenny Jackett has had a very sort of roller coaster ride, hasn't he, with the team, with the supporters. And look, it wouldn't surprise me, given their talent, that for them to then go on another decent run from between now and the end of the season. This might be a sort of, you know, line in the sand moment where they suddenly bounce back from. You know, Pompey fans will be hoping it. They obviously don't believe in that. But yeah, Jackett's done it before. He's come back from the brink to do pretty well.
It's a difficult one for him though, Flo, isn't it? If supporters don't take to a manager, it's very, very, very tricky to turn that around. And it doesn't look like he's going to be able to do that with at least a large section of the Pompey fan base.
Yeah, I mean, like Adrian said, he's been here before and weathered the storm. I just think, and I do sympathise with them, that they're getting impatient because they've been banging on the door for quite a long time now to get out of this division. Every season, they're one of the favourites to get automatic promotion and definitely one of the favourites to be in the playoffs. And it's just not quite worked. Every single season, there is a run that untangles them. So I just think, I don't really know. Like Adrian, I think it's bad timing to want to press reset now. It's better to wait until the summer and then reassess things and look at the recruitment and then think, well, okay, maybe we need to invest a bit more in the team if we're finally going to get out of this division. Because there are, you know, it's very tight this season and it is very difficult. You're going to need consistency and a very good run to get out of it. So I can understand why fans are getting impatient.
Yeah, I do feel for them
a bit. If you get stuck in League One and you feel like you should be higher than that, it can be real purgatory, says the Forest fan who suffered it for three seasons. Whilst we're talking League One, our own captain Charisma, Nick Miller, has done a big piece for The Athletic on James Coppinger's incredible Doncaster Rovers career. So do check that out if you're a subscriber. If you're not, head to theathletic.com/leagueshow to sign up now for just £3.99 a month for the first 6 months. Sam, your selection for our ACCA comes from League One.
Yeah, under 2.5 goals, AFC Wimbledon at home to Burton, just based on Wimbledon drawing their last two 1-1, not being full of goals, and Burton being the tightest defence in Europe.
Okay.
That sounds exciting.
I was going to say tighter than the crab's ass, but I thought,
isn't it amazing? They didn't keep a clean sheet, did they? They didn't keep a clean sheet for months. It is madness.
Yeah, I mean, we could pick anything, couldn't we? It never wins. Abby, what are the odds on this particular
selection? Don't make this whole feature seem completely useless and futile. For that, it is for under 2.5 goals, you will get 4-5. If you fancy backing a winner in this game, AFC Wimbledon are 13-8 and Burton are 6-4.
All right, my pick comes from League One, too. I'm putting my neck on the line here. I'm going to say both teams to score between Peterborough and Hull. What are the odds on that? I bet they're not very generous.
The odds on that are 4-5 for both teams to score. Interestingly, Paddy Power can't actually separate either side. They are both 13-8 to win this game, with the draw 9-4.
Lovely. League Two next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines: Cheltenham, Cambridge and Forest Green remain in the automatic promotion places. Matt and Adams on the score sheet for FGR. You just love to see it. 1 point separates 6th to 9th in the table. Oldham have sacked Harry Kewell. He was their 7th different boss since 2018. At the bottom, Barrow have climbed out of the relegation zone. And Newport have been given permission to play their next two home games away from Rodney Parade. They'll take place at the Cardiff City Stadium. We told you last week that Mike Flynn was not happy with the state of the pitch at Rodney Parade. Before we reflect on some of the weekend's games, let's talk about Oldham's latest managerial mayhem then. I feel like it's not that long ago that I was selling tickets for the Harry Kewell hype train, and now the service has been cancelled. This feels harsh to me, Adrian. Do you agree?
I do, yeah. I mean, they're not going to go down, Oldham, this season. They're kind of mid-table. They win some, they lose some. One thing I will say, and surely Oldham fans are on board with this, is that they were pretty fun to watch. You know, they had real character. There's lots of stirring comebacks. They scored goals. I thought that the players he brought in last summer, a lot of them have been star turns this season in terms of scoring goals. And I think it was just last week I gave them performance of the week against Carlisle. They won 3-1 at Carlisle. Scored some great goals. Yeah, their home form's been disappointing, but you know, it's not just about home form. So, yeah, I think it's really harsh. And you just wonder, what do they expect at Oldham? And how do they expect to sort of build anything in terms of a style and getting the players used to one another when there's such a revolving door with the gaffers? Because you know what will happen. A new manager will come in and they'll just bring in a whole new team of their signings. And they're sort of back to square one a little bit. So, I think not a very well-run club, in my opinion, Oldham.
Not that much damage to Harry Kewell's reputation, though, Flo. That will be the positive for him, I think. He can just point to the fact that, hey, this club is running quite a daft way. They always sack their managers, and he might be back in work before too long.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's had a funny managerial career so far, and I think it is a real shame, and I agree, I think it was a bad decision and he'd done quite well there. It was entertaining and the fans really liked him, and the reaction from the fans following his sacking, they're very angry with it, and it just continues a bit of a confusing and chaotic line of operations there. And I guess the reality is that it was always going to end in tears because of how the club are being run and the situation with Oldham over the last couple of years. And it's a shame that it's had to end like this, because you're like, you look at the results and you look at the performances and you think, actually, he was doing a really good job. So I don't really know what they want, to be honest.
A good example of what you just said, Matt, is Richie Wellens, of course, who lasted, I think, a matter of months there. He's since won a League Two title and is obviously in a really good job in League Two now at Salford. Dino Marmaria as well, assisting Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank at Burton and getting loads of plaudits. So I don't think it damages Harry Kewell whatsoever. He wants to be a manager again. That club, I mean, it's just laughable, isn't it? It doesn't even affect me now. You just look at it and you just feel sorry for the supporters, because while the current owners are at that club, this is just going to continue to happen. Like, we're not there. We don't know what goes on day to day, but you can't keep changing the managers, despite, as Adrian rightly says, the home form's been woeful, and not, you know, beating Southend and Barrow in the last few weeks is probably the final straw for an owner who's got a little bit of a short fuse when it comes to getting rid of managers.
He sure has. In terms of Saturday's action, we'll start with the leaders, they being Cheltenham, who've now won four on the bounce, though Port Vale gave them a scare on Saturday. Clark, it's taken Cheltenham a while to get going. Anything tactically that Duffman has changed to kickstart this revival?
Not really. I mean, they've still got the 3-5-2 is the way that they go pretty much most weeks. It was a 3-2 battering. Let's not give Port Vale too much credit here. It was 3-0. Could have been worse. It was just a case of sort of switching off at the end. I really like Cheltenham. Really, we saw how they can defend as a team against City, didn't we, with the back three sort of, you know, pretty heroic. But then they've got, you know, Alfie May up top, Sam Smith on loan. They're looking pretty sharp. Two of the best wing-backs, I think, in the league, in Blair and Hussey. And Liam Sercombe came back into the team at the weekend from the bench. So, I mean, Cheltenham, I think 22 points from possible 27. That they're a very rounded team, and I think that they're going to be hard to stop this season. They blew it last year. Let's get it right. They should have gone up by the playoffs, had a stinker in the most important matches. I think there's a steely determination to take the playoffs out of the equation this time.
Barrow 2, Mansfield 0. Barrow really might stay up after this victory. It moves them out of the relegation zone. Sam, Rob Kelly there in place of Michael Jolly. Has he got the tools at his disposal to keep Barrow up?
I think he's got the tools individually. I think he's a real safe pair of hands. Had a really long, varied, successful career in all manner of roles and winning games. And I know they had two narrow defeats recently, and this could have gone the other way quite easily in the first half. I thought they had good chances, Mansfield, to probably put the game to bed and out of reach, but stayed in there and you know, got good impact from his substitutes after making quite questionable team selection for this. Erdley and James for two left out of the side, but found the way to win, and that was despite, you know, Mansfield having long spells of possession. But yeah, I'd be very confident with him at the helm, given his track record, especially when you think back to him having great success initially when he went in at Leicester in the same capacity. Yeah, they've got a hell of an opportunity, but it is tight down there, and there's a number of clubs still that would be concerned about falling down that trapdoor.
Mansfield, Flo, probably not one of those. They've got a decent number of points on the board, but their form has completely collapsed. Their latest defeat, it is, what, five out of their last six games that they've lost? They're kind of sleepwalking their way through the end of the season, and that's not a great look for Nigel Clough, because this is a club who likes to change managers fairly regularly too. So they need to have some sort of positive end to the campaign.
Yeah, and it's not looking good either because they're playing Cheltenham tomorrow. So it's hard to see a way out of this run anytime soon. But yeah, they have to because they do have a reputation for being fairly quick on the managerial changes. So you don't want it to get to the point where other people around you, like Barrow, are picking up and starting good runs and you're the ones who are slowly getting closer and closer and closer. And then at that point, they pull the trigger, have an interim manager, and then it's just a complete scrap and fight for survival.
Absolutely. Adrian, your pick for our ACCA comes from League Two.
Yes, I'm going for Harrogate to beat Colchester United, Beleaguer Colchester, who are definitely not out of danger at the bottom of League Two. Harrogate, 4 wins in their last 6 games. Colchester, 4 wins in their last 22 games. So the form line says that the Harrogate should be strong favourites. Are they, Abby?
Indeed, they are 17-20 to win this one. In fact, a draw is more likely than a Colchester win. Draw 12-5. Colu to win 16-5. Put that all into our ACCA cracker calculator, and it comes out at a nice little 9-1. Odds are accurate at the time of recording. You can find it all out at the Paddy Power website or app. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop.
It's time for a game of Warnock or McCarthy. Double M joined the 1000 Club this week, you see. Neil Warnock's already a member and he's been in the news, so that's why we're doing this. Couple of questions each, couple of quotes each, I should say. You have to tell me, is it McCarthy or is it Warnock? Adrian, you're up first. This is the quote. It bugs me when I see other managers getting top jobs and I know they're not as good as me. Was it Warnock or McCarthy?
McCarthy.
It was Warnock. Incorrect. Oh. That was one of the easy ones.
I thought it sounded like McCarthy during his commentary and pundit days in that sort of period where he left and didn't have a job. I thought it would have come from that, but you know.
Flo, you're up next. Let's see if you get this one right. Opinions are like backsides. We've all got them, but it's not wise to air them in public.
That's got to be Warnock, surely.
Oh, this is a dreadful start. It was Mick McCarthy.
So I should have gone for the law of, like, you know, just multiple choice that Abby was going to do McCarthy after a Warnock. So I fell into that trap.
Sam, you got to add some respectability back to this contest. Here's yours. That's a bollocks booking. We might as well pack in and stop doing it. It was a fabulous tackle.
Does he say me in any stage of this sentence?
No clues.
No me. I think bollocks is probably more Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that was what gave it away, actually. The bollocks gave it away. You've got one more each. Adrian, let's see if this one's easy. And actually, this is the easiest of the bunch. If you don't get this, then we should cancel the game. The two managers I really dislike are Stan Ternan and Gary Megson. The old saying that I wouldn't piss on them if they were on fire applies.
Yeah,
come on, mate.
It has to be Warnock. It has to be. McCarthy doesn't berate people like that, does he? Doesn't berate other managers.
No, it's definitely Warnock. He's got a whole section on his Wikipedia pages, I remember, about how much he dislikes Stan Ternan, and the Megson thing comes from the Battle of Bramall Lane. Flo, this is your last one. I'll probably have had enough of him by Christmas, so hopefully he'll score 10 or 15 goals by then and get himself a move. Abby says you should definitely get this one, given who he is talking about.
Warnock, then. That was a bit of a clue, but...
Yeah, it was. Do you know who he was talking about?
Adele Tarapt.
It was Adele Tarapt. You're right, Sam.
Sorry, Flo.
Sam.
That's all right.
This is it, Sam. Last one.
Pressure's on, Sam.
To win, is it?
Yeah, to win. Yeah, yeah. There's no prize, but you win, my respect. This is the best quote of the bunch for me. It wasn't a monkey on my back. It was Planet of the Apes. Was it Warnock or was it McCarthy?
Mick.
It was Mick, yeah. Beautiful way with words, hasn't it? Don't just need to toss out casual swears all the time. Good, that was good fun. Sheer a celebration at the end from Sam there too, you love to see it. Right, that'll do it for this week. Many thanks to Sam, Adrian, Flo and producer Abby. The latter will be with George and Ali for extra time on Thursday. We'll catch up with you again same time next week. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Money Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Finding it difficult to get off to sleep? Well, you are not alone. After a long day of Zoom, doom and gloom, it's hard to relax and just drop off. Maybe you need a bedtime story. I know, there's a lot of them out there. They ask you to imagine that you're laying on a lily of contentedness, drifting upon a lake of calm, holding hands with the otter of placidity. R1 isn't like that. It's a football bedtime story, and it sounds like this.
When Brian Clough arrived at Nottingham Forest in January 1975, they were a mediocre provincial club whose most recent success was winning the FA Cup in 1959. But they were 13th in the old second division now. Clough, too, was damaged goods.
So give it a go tonight. Subscribe to Football Bedtime Stories on your favourite podcast provider now.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.